AgBio Science is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
Like one out of three calories is wasted in the United States, like food waste, crops that are left behind in fields after harvesting, like all these things can be converted by animals into meat, milk, and eggs. So that's what we're trying to do. And then the fertilizer from the chickens, the litter can be used to, you know, fertilize the crops in the fields. And that's the cycle. So you keep the nutrients actually flowing within the food cycle instead of leaking out.
Welcome to AgBio Science, the number one podcast in the world for innovation in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture. Welcome back to AgBio Science. I'm Kayla Chittister, producer of the podcast and this week's host of the show. Kipster Eggs created a carbon neutral egg. And when they decided to expand from the Netherlands to the U.S., Indiana was their first stop along the way, partnering with MPS Eggs out of Northern Indiana. This week, we're joined by Sandra Vine, Managing Director for Kipster U.S., and we talk about what it means to them when they say closing the loop on a circular food system, the innovation they're putting in place to create a new way of egg production, and what she sees ahead for the company as they look ahead to 2026. Please enjoy my conversation with Sandra Vine. I certainly did this week on Ag Bioscience. Sandra, welcome to Ag Bioscience.
Thank you for having me.
I think we should start. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. And I think we should start with some high level perspective on Kipster, and we're going to get into all the partnership and stuff. But I want to talk about the differentiation of the Kipster egg production model, what you guys do, and how it is different than egg production in the US as we know it.
Sure. Yeah. So maybe I should really start from the beginning of why we did this. Our founders really looked at how can we produce food in a more sustainable way and also really, you know, least impacts for the animals, least suffering. And so they actually sat down and looked at, okay, a chicken is actually a forest bird. So let's go to the animal welfare organizations and sit down with them and see, like, hey, what is the natural instinct of a forest bird? What are the needs? What does a chicken need to be, you know, happy? How do they behave? What are their natural expressions? And so they really started from scratch designing a farm to make sure it has enough daylight, even if they cannot go outside. So they have a huge indoor garden. They like to forage. They like to perch. They like to sit together. They like to dust bathe. They like to flap around. So we really looked at how can we bring all those elements in so that they can just be chickens. And that's where it started. And from there, we looked at the environmental impacts, how to reduce that. So really from the scratch, from the start, like, hey, how can we do this in a different way to look at the animal and the environment?
That started in the Netherlands in 2017, right?
That's right, yeah.
And so what gaps did the team sort of see in the market that were identified that said, hey, we have something here. How can we go innovate to fill this gap in the market that's both economically viable and also sustainable?
Again, like I would need to back up to our founder, Ruud Sanders, who is a third generation poultry farmer in the Netherlands. He and his brother had a huge, large egg company all over Europe, and they grew really fast. But then all of a sudden, they went bankrupt. And he lost his home, he lost his bank accounts, he lost pretty much everything. And he had a really young family. And so they moved into a rental home. He started teaching at an agricultural university. And then he got these people from Africa who came and visited him. And they asked them, hey, Ruud, can you show us the different production systems and show us why the Netherlands is so efficient in producing eggs? And so he took them to farms and showed them around. And then he said, well, you need to have corn and soy, the best quality to feed to the chickens. And then people looked at him and said, that's crazy. Why would you feed good corn and soy to animals? Instead, we feed it to people. We could feed a lot more people from that same amount. And then the chickens could eat the byproducts. They could eat the scraps. And that's how we do it. Isn't that more efficient? And so he thought, wow, I actually never thought about that. I never looked at it that way. And so he sat down with agricultural researchers at the University of Wageningen and looked at, okay, how can we use a system that is really focused on byproducts and food waste? There's already so much in the system. Why don't we use that for animals? Because they can eat whatever we can't eat and still produce meat and dairy and eggs. And so that's where it started. And then the animal welfare, he also started taking courses on what does a chicken think? How does a, you know, what is a chicken? And he was shocked to know that actually he didn't know much about chickens and only how to get the most eggs out of an animal, but not like what they like, what they dislike, how they behave. And so that's where he brought together different founders and looked at the animal welfare side and the environmental side, and also decided, hey, we want to do this very transparently. We want to bring the consumer along so that the consumer understands, like, hey, why do you give antibiotics? Why do we have non-vegetarian feed? Why is your yolk more yellow than, you know, and why aren't your chickens running out on the pasture a mile away? And so we have a visitor center at the farm and YouTube live streaming for consumers to look at the chickens 24/7 for them to really understand where their food comes from. And we saw that really as a need because we got so many questions and we hear from food companies that consumers don't know where their food comes from. And so we really wanted to play into that. So we actually just really started to look at what we need to do to provide food in a sustainable way for the future and not necessarily what the consumer wants. So that was where we saw an opportunity to do it differently.
It's really taking a problem statement, identifying it, and creating that solution through transparency. Mm-hmm. And so you talk a lot about closing the loop on the food system, which is what your team aims to do. And as you've expanded into the US, what has that looked like for you here as you're the managing director versus maybe what it looks like over in Europe?
Yeah, absolutely. So everything is different in Europe when you do agriculture. It's culture that is, you know, in the context of a country, right? And society. And so when we started, we had to start from scratch here. In the Netherlands, we had a feed mill that already worked on this concept with pig farmers. But here it was new, kind of. So we had to sit down with the feed mill to look at what byproducts do you already have that we can use, and what is missing and where would we get that. And then the farm manager at MPS, this is a new topic to them. So we had to bring them along. And then the production manager, the nutritionist. So we have an in-house veterinarian in the Netherlands who works really closely with the team here to look for those byproducts that could really work in a closed loop cycle. And so, yeah, what's available here is different from what is available in the Netherlands. And what's available here in Indiana would be different than what's available in California if you were to, you know, transfer that concept to other states.
I should probably ask for somebody who's listening or watching that doesn't know, what is the closed loop cycle?
Sure. Let's start there. So, you know, right now, the chickens, especially egg farming, the hens eat a lot of corn and soy. So they need land that is used to grow those crops, right? And then they get processed into chicken feed. And in additional, you have some vitamin and minerals that are added. If you want an orange yolk, you will add some paprika or some other additives to the feed. Of course, they need to make sure that it's complete in amino acid profile. So the right nutrients, the right energy, protein, and all of that. But what we are doing is looking at what is already available in the food system. So think of byproducts from crop processing. So hulls, meals, flour, bits of pasta that don't make it into the final packaging that goes on the shelf in the manufacturing plant. We could use that. And then we can mix it all together into comprehensive feed for the chickens. So that way we can move away from the land as much as we can. We can use that land instead to grow crops for people. So that people can eat more nutritious and diverse crops, and then we can move away from the land. And one of the reasons is that we do this is because 70% of all agricultural land in the US is actually used to feed animals, or some of it goes to biofuel. And in the meantime, we import a lot of vegetables and fruits from abroad. And we think that is not right. We can use whatever is already in the food system. Like 1 out of 3 calories is wasted in the United States, like food waste, crops that are left behind in the fields after harvesting. Like all these things can be converted by animals into meat, milk, and eggs. So that's what we're trying to do. And then the fertilizer from the chickens, the litter can be used to, you know, fertilize the crops in the fields. And that's the cycle. So you keep the nutrients actually flowing within the food cycle instead of leaking out. Doing it this way also reduces our carbon footprint by about like 50% on the feed side. When you look at carbon footprint of an egg, most of that comes from feed, like 70% or so comes from feed. So we can cut a lot of it by using that system.
How have you been able to measure success? And are there benchmarks that you're maybe setting for the operation here in the U.S. In terms of efficiency, sustainability, that you hope to accomplish?
Well, I think the basic measures are comparing it to the conventional way, right? Because we need to still produce food. Our productivity per chicken, mortality in the farm. We don't trim the beaks for the hens, so they tend to peck each other more. So we have to keep them busy, and so the mortality is important for us, and that's what we're trying to manage. The health, quality of the egg, the calcium, the shell. So all these standard things we'll be measuring. And for now, that's all just on par or better than conventional. And then we also do life cycle assessments on the environmental side. So looking at the carbon footprint, looking at the land use, the water use, the energy use. And we have set goals for that as well to reduce continuously over time. So we'll compare that as well as a benchmark.
You've had the opportunity to get Kipster eggs into a number of retail establishments, Kroger, Pick and Save, a number of retailers. What has the feedback looked like from them as they've taken on what is a carbon neutral egg in their stores?
So actually, we only have a deal with Kroger, exclusive co-branding agreement that we have with them for a few years.
Okay.
And so all these stores that you just mentioned are banners of Kroger. So they have different names. And they did some research maybe 6 months ago or a year ago, like how does carbon neutral actually, how is it perceived by their clients, by their customers? And it turns out it's people don't really know what to make of it. There's a small group that understands, but a lot of people don't understand what carbon neutral means. And they are also confused and a little worried about greenwashing because they're not familiar with the term. So it turns out that animal welfare and health are most important to consumers that buy our product and in general. And the carbon neutral is still takes a lot of education and engagement to really understand what it means. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of innovation and storytelling that kind of comes along with that, and we're going to dive into some of that after the break. We are going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. Ag Bioscience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
A healthy company is a blessing, but a well-insured company is a necessity. That's why Indiana Farm Bureau offers more affordable health plans for eligible members. Whether you have just a handful of employees or a larger enterprise, building a stable business demands employees who are just as strong and healthy. Indiana Farm Bureau can help with health plans that include medical, dental, vision, and Medicare supplement insurance plans. And you can sign up for membership and apply for an Indiana Farm Bureau health plan any time of year. Indiana Farm Bureau understands the cost of healthcare has rapidly become one of the largest expenses for many small businesses. We invite you to compare our health plans to your current coverage. We're confident you could find significant savings. To learn more about the health plan that's right for you, visit infbhealthplans.com and make the switch today.
Welcome back to Ag Bioscience. Sandra, there's new innovation happening, you know, across the entire value chain, but something happening in poultry is this Inovosexing technology. And I'm curious from your perspective, what opportunity it provides. First of all, I'd love an explanation on what it is, but also what it does and the opportunity it provides from a sustainability and an economics perspective as well.
Sure. So yeah, in ovo sexing technology is a recent new development in the United States. It's been used for a while in Europe, but this year was the first time it came to the US. So what it actually... what it does is you can look in the hatching egg to see what the sex is of the chick, if it's a male or a female. And why is that important? Because currently, when we order 24,000 new hens, laying hens for the farm, we have to order more than 50,000 because half of those are male, right? And so when they hatch, the males are kind of worthless because they don't lay eggs. And they are also not bred to put on a lot of weight as meat birds. So there's a whole other industry that's just focused on the genetic and the breeding of the meat birds, the broiler birds. So the little roosters don't really have a purpose in the current food system. And so what they do at the hatchery, when those, you know, chicks come out of the egg, they call them immediately on the day of hatch. And then the females they send to the pullet farms to grow into laying hens. And we found that really not the right way to deal with animals. In the Netherlands, we raise those roosters to make meat from it. And we bring that to market. In the US, we tried. We raised a few flocks of roosters, but we couldn't find the processing facilities that could do it at a scale. And at a cost that was acceptable to us. And so we're trying to still figure that out. But in the meantime, while we do that, we can use Inovo. And that means that the machine a day... So a chick is in the egg for 21 days before it hatches. This machine can look at day 8 or 9, like, hey, this is a male, this is a female. And they do that through MRI imaging. Or the technology that we use actually drills a little hole in the egg, takes the DNA fluid out or the fluid out and looks at the DNA and then identifies what it is. And then a machine can take out the males. And then with beeswax, the hole gets, you know, stopped. And then the female go back into the incubator and the males are separated. So they don't hatch at all. And supposedly this is all before they can feel pain. So it's a more ethical way of disposing of the male chicks.
Where do you see, and are there other emerging innovations happening in this space that create new opportunity?
Innovations in the genetic space or just in general?
Just in general.
Yeah, there's so many things happening with AI, like imaging of birds in the barn to see if the feather pack changes. So you can maybe anticipate there's like something off with the chickens, maybe a disease or pecking behavior or stressing them out. There's tests with AI on sounds, similar, like detecting like what is happening in the flock. Is there something off so that the farmer can sooner prevent things from happening instead of having higher mortality or having to administer antibiotics or something. Yeah, so I think there's lots of fun new technologies being tested to improve the welfare, improve efficiency and environmental impacts as well.
You guys have been really great at selecting specific partnerships as you've made your expansion into the U.S. and MPS Egg Farms in Northern Indiana was where you started and put your first operation. Can you kind of speak to the impetus behind that being the first place you got started and how that partnership has sort of blossomed as you've expanded?
So when we were in conversations with Kroger to start in the US, you know, we were excited, but we also realized like doing agriculture in a whole different country is challenging. And we didn't want to do it just on our own by ourselves because we knew that was going to be hard. And then Kroger introduced us to MPS, one of their suppliers. And yeah, they were excited about the concept and they were looking at the future and thinking this is what consumers are going to move to, like the cage-free innovation, animal welfare, and environment. And so we started working with them And it's been really great. We've been learning a lot from them, and we've hopefully, you know, they've been learning from us. And it's great that some of the things are already applying to the other facilities that they have. It's been really a pleasure working with them.
It's been really, I think, great to hear, Sandra, the innovation you guys are bringing for animal welfare, for the sustainability side. It's such an interesting concept. And I know you're not based out of Indiana. You come in monthly. And so I want to just hear a little bit more about your role, because I know you spend a little time in DC, right? And so what is, I think, the overall Kipster vision for the U.S. in the future? Like, what do you guys want to do in the future?
Oh, we want to still do so much. Yeah, of course, we would like to, you know, expand across the country. And right now we're in a few states. We would like to move to some other states as well to expand there. And on the innovation side, we know we're not there yet. We want to continuously improve. Like, we have this large indoor garden with the skylights for the chickens to be able to, you know, still have daylight and forage and perch. Well, they cannot go outside now with the bird flu going around because the outdoor gardens are closed. But once they can go back into the outdoor garden, I think we would like to experiment a little bit there with different growth and different things to enrich the outdoor gardens for them. There's like, what can we do with the roosters to really have them maybe put on more weight? Is there a dual breed that we can look at? The feed. There's a lot of food waste that can currently not be turned into feed for animals because of safety reasons, or the technology is not there yet. So would love to, you know, work with retail partners and others and innovators to really look at how can we really utilize all the food waste that's currently in the system and feed that to animals. Of course, we first need to, you know, reduce it and feed it to people, but whatever is left over and is safe to go to animals, we could do that. So there's a ton of things we still have to sort out.
Not to mention the story that you want to make sure consumers are hearing as well.
Right. Yes. Yeah. A lot of work to do there too. And as a startup with limited marketing budget, you know, that's a challenge, but, yeah, we're working on that too.
Absolutely. Well, what's ahead in 2026 that has you most excited?
Yeah, I think we've worked with Kroger for 3 years, and it's been a great partnership. The exclusivity of our partnership is going away, so we're looking to expand in other regions as well and engage new consumers. And so that's what I'm really excited about, to really open it up and expand. And hopefully we'll stay safe with the bird flu, because that is a very scary thing. So I would be really excited by the end of the year if everything stayed safe.
Yeah, safety is really important. And I did not want to spend 20 minutes talking to you about bird flu, so we tried to avoid it for as long as possible. I hope that we were successful in that endeavor.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Sandra, for joining us on Ag Bioscience. We look forward to seeing and hearing more about where you guys are headed in the new year.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for tuning into Ag Bioscience. We look forward to seeing you next week on the podcast. Ag Bioscience is a podcast by Agrinovis Indiana, brought to you by Indiana Farm Bureau. Produced by Kayla Chittister and Fabian Rodriguez. Photography and design by Kaylee Verstey. Video by Darren Cooper and 1898 Creative. If you like today's episode, subscribe, rate, listen, and review. Get all episodes of Ag Bioscience online at agrinovisindiana.com.